Are you looking to get promoted? Are you going to be testing for any promotions anytime soon? Then you want to listen to my next guest, Bill Riley. He spent many years in law enforcement at some of the most senior levels in an organization, and he is known as the police chief coach. He's helping police officers at all ranks achieve their next promotion. Bill Riley, next on the CJ Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Patrick here. So excited to be here. Thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. Welcome back. That's why we continue to grow, and that's why we're the number one criminal justice podcast out there, because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you for sharing it with your family and friends. Please continue to do that. And when you have a moment, head over to Apple Podcasts. Give us that five-star rating and review. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field. Thank you for what you are doing. Remember, in these tumultuous times, unprecedented times, remember this: you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Keep up the fantastic work. You know, it's such an honor and privilege to be partnering with a great company like Detectachem. If you've never heard of this company, you need to do your research, because they are helping keep our brave men and women safer by offering mobile threat detection that fits in the palm of their hands, detecting illicit drugs, explosives, now COVID-19. This is must-have technology for your organization. Head over to CJEvolution.com, see the link to Detectachem, and see how they can help keep your troops safer.
I represent low-cost airlines, and we know a lot of you are not traveling right now, and we understand. However, if you do need to travel between now and the end of the year, now is a great time to lock in some of the lowest prices we've seen in a lifetime. Hey, in normal times, we can save you up to 75%, but now airlines are practically giving away seats. We have inside deals on over 500 airlines. Here are a few sample round-trip deals we found. Seattle to Vegas, $35. Chicago to Atlanta, $85. Los Angeles to Atlanta, $100. Of course, there are some limitations, but the airlines want your business right now. And cancellation and change fees are flexible. So fly somewhere this year, book now, save a ton, call right now.
800-296-1337. 800-296-1337. 800-296-1337, 800-296-1337.
Folks, if you love coffee, I know a lot of you do, your first responders and criminal justice professionals, you are going to love the products from Four Sigmatic. They have everything from coffees to cocos to elixirs. You're going to love it all. My personal favorite is the Lion's Mane Mushroom Coffee. I don't start my day off without my Lion's Mane Mushroom Coffee. Head over to CJEvolution.com. That's CJEvolution.com. You're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. And best of all, when you click that link and you get some stuff in your shopping cart, you're going to get 15% off of your purchases using the promo code CJEVO. Enjoy. Grab a notepad, grab a pen, take some notes from the police chief coach, Bill Riley, next on the CJ Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am very excited to have my next guest on the show. He's known as the police chief coach, and he's helping police at all ranks achieve their next promotion. Bill Riley is on the show. Are you there, sir?
I am well, Patrick. Thank you. How are you?
Well, I am fantastic. Thank you for being on the show, sir. I know you're probably very busy, but I always ask Leos, former Leos that come on the show, sir, what made you get into law enforcement? What was the catalyst?
Actually, the catalyst was my family. My father was a police officer in New York City in the 50s and 60s, which, as you can imagine, was a very different time for law enforcement. Yeah. And I had law enforcement on both sides of my family, uncles, cousins. So it was all around me. And I knew from a very young age that that was the path I wanted to go. And when I finished college, I went into the business world for a little period of time. And that just solidified for me that business world was not for me. Policing was, and pursued my dream and loved every day of it.
And you did it for how long, sir? Yeah, how long?
21 years.
I'm sorry?
21 years.
Oh, 21. So congratulations. Thank you for your service, sir. I really do. Without the brave men and women serving every day, I really don't think we would we would have the country we have right now. You know, there's a lot of issues, obviously. But
if people come to you, and maybe you've gotten this question before, Bill, but if people said, Bill, what advice would you give me? I want to get into law enforcement. Again, a tumultuous time out there. That's an understatement. But what would you give, what advice would you give people wanting to get into to law enforcement?
I think anybody who wants to be in it should be seriously pursuing it. Yeah. I believe that right now we're finding more and more people who don't have any desire to go into it. You know, I mentioned how so much of my family was in law enforcement back then, back when I was growing up. And currently, none are. I have no uncles, no cousins, no relatives whatsoever that are in policing. So it really, the whole dynamic seems to be changing. And we definitely need those people who have an interest. We want to work with them. But I believe we have to make sure that their eyes are wide open mm-hmm. in what they're going into. You know, some of the recruiting programs that have been done in the past painted an image of law enforcement and policing that wasn't necessarily accurate. And I believe when you do that, you cause frustration for somebody who commits to the career and realizes it wasn't what you told them that it was. So we need to be honest with them, but certainly need to encourage them.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I say this all the time, Chief. I really believe that the majority of people out there support our brave men and women. I wish they were more vocal, but I really do believe that they support law enforcement. And I never thought I would see a day where, you know, you can't, I guess it depends on where you're at in the country, but I know here where I'm at, I mean, you have to be really cautious if you're a cop putting a thin blue line flag up on your porch, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Right. And that's, it's very troublesome.
Yeah, it is. But I am glad, and thank God we still have brave men and women who, you know, want to get into the field. I talk to recruits all the time. Well, not as much anymore, but when I go into the academy, and you know, they ask me my advice, and I pretty much say what you say, sir, is, you know, I mean, it's a tough job, but you got to go in there realistically. It's not what you, and unfortunately, you know, a lot of people get what they know about police work off TV and the movies. So you got to open their eyes, like you said.
Right.
Now, you spent a lot of time in law enforcement. Oh, first of all, let me back up, Chief. Talk about your career. You started with the Hartford Police Department. Talk about, you know, your progression through that agency and what you did.
I was very fortunate. So I started back in 1983, which is obviously a very long time ago. I did my first 5 years in patrol, mainly on a cruiser, but some footbeat work, and then went into our specialized crime suppression unit. And that role was more of dealing with street level crimes, street level narcotic sales, some plainclothes work, some uniform work, and did that for a couple of years. And I was my father was a sergeant, and I wanted to be a sergeant, mainly because my father had been a sergeant. So the testing was coming up right around my 7 year mark, and I was not comfortable with oral boards as well. As a matter of fact, I had a phobia of public speaking.
Most people do.
and not just anxiety. You know, I studied, my graduate work was in communication, and they talk about communication anxiety. Although they don't tell you how to get rid of it, they just tell you it exists. But this was beyond anxiety. This was an actual phobia where it really drove my behavior of avoidance because it was so troublesome for me. But I realized I had to overcome that if I wanted to go through and be successful in an oral board. So I went through a program that helped me with that. And I was fortunate enough to do well in both the written exam and the oral board. And I came out at the top of the list. And there was 220 of us that were competing for multiple openings. But because I was at the top of the list in the number one slot, our seniority was set by how you did on the test. And they ended up promoting, I believe it was somewhere around 55 or 60 people off of that list. So I had a whole slew of people behind me, but it also timed me really well for future promotion opportunities. Shortly after after my promotion, I went back to patrol for a little bit of time. And then an opening came with our, Hartford had its own police academy. An opening came there and I put in for that. And I was given that spot. And I spent the middle third of my career in the police academy as an instructor and a supervisor. And actually I was promoted to lieutenant while I was there, and they kept me there as a commander. So it was really there that I developed the love for the instruction and what I'm doing now as far as coaching. I was ultimately promoted to captain from there, went back to running a district. We had three districts in Hartford at the time, and then promoted to assistant chief and retired as the chief of staff for the agency.
Wow. Talk about a career. Now, how big is Hartford, Chief? I mean, it maybe gotten bigger or smaller since you've been there?
It's gotten smaller. When I went on, our class put the ranks at over 500 sworn officers. It's now, I believe, about 420. It's dropped into the mid 300s at times. So it's all over the place. But the right number, I believe the authorized number is somewhere around 450 at this time.
Yeah. And I love what you said about, you know, overcoming your fear. I was the same way. Maybe, you know, I was afraid, you know, of, like most people are afraid of getting out in front of people. But what really helped me, Chief, was getting, because I teach, and I know you teach too, on the college level. And I remember getting my first teaching gig, and it was like, well, you have to get in front of people.
Right.
You know? And then that really helped me kind of, and of course, as a police officer too, you're always in front of people, or, you know, talking to people and, you know, suspects and everything and citizens. So I think that helped me. But the thing for me was getting up in front of a classroom where you have, you know, 50, 60 people, kids in there. So that really helped me. And I really don't have that much of a fear anymore. I actually look forward to getting up in front of people.
I'm the same way. I love it. You know, it changed 180 degrees for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what advice, getting back to policing, Chief, what, obviously so many problems out there, you know, that law enforcement is dealing with. Some of it, you know, we cause. I mean, we're not perfect, and I know you know that. But what are some of the problems you see facing police everywhere, you know, as we go through, as we go forward?
The number one problem, and this is in many organizations, not just police organizations, but I believe it's heightened in police organizations, is a lack of certainty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as human beings, we crave a certain degree of certainty. We pretty much want to know, what do you want us to do? And ideally, we want to know what the future holds. I mean, we watch the weather forecast because we want to know what the weather is going to be like tomorrow. And the more certain we are about the weather, the better we can make our plans.
Mm-hmm.
That's a metaphor for everything we do as far as certainty. We want to know what we're walking into so that we can adapt our behaviors to it. And back to your question about the biggest challenge, it's that lack of certainty. The lack of consistency, the changing messages, it's really taking a toll, to the point where officers are really getting to a point of, I don't know what you want me to do, so how do I possibly do, you know, what you want? And the messages they're getting, unfortunately, are not clear enough, or they're so contradictory that confusion is resulting and certainty is absent.
Yeah. And Bill, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you talk to a lot of law enforcement, obviously, but there's not one person. I'm serious. I'm not being overdramatic with this. There's not one person I've talked to in law enforcement, sir, that is active duty, that is currently doing it, that is not looking for a way out. And that is sad when they're looking for exit ramps. And you probably know the exact number. I read something a couple of weeks ago. NYPD just lost. I mean, tons of people are leaving. They're retiring.
Yes.
And we're not filling those positions up. So it's scary.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, sir.
I'm starting to see some of that come back. You know, starting to see that I've gotten significantly busier in the last 4 to 6 weeks because of, well, a couple of factors. Just what you said, so many of those supervisory ranks are being depleted because many of those people are retirement eligible. Mm-hmm. But also the world obviously was put on hold back in the spring when COVID first made its appearance. And you can only be on hold for so long. So agencies are trying to find ways around of filling the ranks that they would have filled back in the spring. So there are some, but there's real budget concerns that really aren't making too much noise now, but I believe that that's going to have a dramatic impact on staffing levels at all ranks, showing itself up next year and the year after, and maybe for years to come.
Well, what NYPD, correct me if I'm wrong, they took $1 billion out of their budget?
Yes, that's what I had heard.
I mean, $1 billion, I know that's a ton of money, but when you're dealing with the largest municipality in the country, a lot of that is cops. What do they have, like 30,000 cops or 20-something thousand?
It was over 30.
Over 30? So that is going to play a factor in it. You know that. And I don't think a lot of people don't realize the impact that's going to have.
I agree. And again, it's that lack of certainty, the lack of whether people are going to be supported, the accountability bills that are being written that have officers concerned that they have targets on their back from administrations or politicians. As you know, this job has a lot of unknowns and requires a lot of judgment calls, and not all of that's easy to do. And as a trainer, I don't believe we train nearly enough to cover the wide spectrum of responses that we want officers prepared to be able to do skillfully. You know, it's one thing to say, okay, you should know what to do, but we're talking about skill development. Skill development requires practice. Look what pro football players do just to get ready for a game, the amount of practice that they do. And compare that to the amount of practice we do to save somebody's life or save our own life. It's so minimal. And that's a real concern.
Yeah. And it's interesting you said lack of certainty, sir, because I've heard that before. I talked to a lot of people and a lot of them have said the exact same thing you're saying. And I agree. Look, cops will do whatever you tell them to do. Just tell them to do something and what they're supposed to be doing.
Right.
A lot of cops have no idea what their role is, what they're supposed to be doing, what they're supposed to be enforcing, what they're not supposed to be enforcing. It's crazy. I've never seen anything like this.
And so much of that is coming from outside of the department, not inside the department. You know, chiefs are the ones that are finding themselves on the chopping block. They're getting, I do all the, you know, news feeds on retiring police chiefs and resigning police chiefs and such. And the amount of stories that are out there now about chiefs leaving or being forced out is so much higher than it had been. And so often it's not their fault. You know, they're getting the mixed messages above them and the political pressures above them that they don't know what's expected of them either. So how do they convey that down in the organization? And their chiefs are an easy scapegoat. You know, they often cannot publicly defend themselves without running up against the person to whom they report. And if they go against that person, they're likely to get forced out anyway because they're not going to be in alignment. So police are an easy target because of their lack of ability to defend themselves.
Yeah.
The unions are the only ones that really have that leverage of being able to get out there and put that other message out there. Administrations often cannot.
Yeah. And the chiefs have a tough job. I know some cops that might be listening to this and say, oh, they're chiefs. They have a very, very tough job. And look, to your point, Bill, they don't fire the team. They fire the coach. And, you know, I agree. You know, I've seen, as you probably have, a lot of chiefs have lost their job. The chief in Seattle, she was a brand new chief, right?
Yeah.
And then she got canned, what, months afterwards?
Yeah, and well thought of, you know. But again, so many of those calls that were being made
from politicians. Yeah.
Yes. And that has to be extremely frustrating for somebody who believes they're empowered to run their agency to find out that that is not the case.
Yeah. And a lot of the people that are making the shots, Bill, as you probably know, are people that have no idea. I'm talking about the politicians, have no idea what it's like to police or have they have no idea, but they're making these critical decisions.
Correct.
Well, I am glad that you're seeing more people reaching out to your business because you're doing a tremendous service to our brave men and women. And let's talk about that. I mean, let's talk about your business now, the police chief coach. Now, a lot of people out there don't know what goes into selecting, not just officers in a selection process, but more importantly, senior executives in law enforcement agencies. Can you shed some light on that?
As far as help me clarify that, please.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess people have no idea what goes into a process of promotion, you know, when it comes to certain levels, like police chief. Like a lot of people have no idea what it takes to become a police chief. Can you shed some light on that?
Yes, I'm sorry. It's so different. Places are different all over the country. And that's a little bit of the challenge that candidates deal with. You know, you'll have some agencies that they only let people rise up from within. Mm-hmm. So if you get groomed, if you get the right opportunities and you're sitting at the number two position and the number one steps away, it's natural that you're going to ascend into that position. You have others that, you know, make sure that they look at a much wider field before they determine who's going to be in that position. Testing for a chief position, happens frequently, but it's not a must, you know, whereas you see it very frequently for corporal, sergeant, lieutenant, captain, when you get to the chief position, oftentimes many agencies or municipalities don't feel that they need to test. They feel that anybody who's competing in that field has a level of competency already, or they can determine it from a resume, whether they have enough experience, and therefore they rely on the interview process. And the interview process is not a traditional interview process in many cases either. A lot of times there'll be community interviews, faith-based interviews, internal and external interviews, interviews with other department heads. So there can be a broad spectrum of evaluation tools that are put in place for the chief position. You don't see that as much for the lower positions.
Mm-hmm. And I think I told you before we started, Bill, I mean, a lot of what I was used to, especially when you start progressing through those higher ranks, are assessment centers.
Right.
You know, and I know, like, to your point, I mean, it could be different. It could be a lot of oral boards, like you said, or it could be a combination, right, of assessment centers and oral boards.
Yes. As a matter of fact, often the structured interview, which essentially is an oral board, is a component of an assessment center. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the exercises, essentially an oral board inside of an assessment center. And the assessment center, for people who are unfamiliar with it, essentially is to be the day in the life of whatever position that you're going for. So it's multiple exercises, skill-based exercises, where you have to interact. You most likely have to write. You may do an in-basket exercise where you're dealing with correspondence that's coming in and having to process that and prioritize that. Role play exercises, presentations for the chiefs. It could be a press conference. So all these different things that allow assessors to determine how ready you are to serve that vacant position.
Do you think it's better to promote, and I know different factors come into play, but do you think it's better overall to promote from within an organization? Or go ahead, sir.
If the organization is healthy, yes. Mm-hmm. Promote from within. If you have the talent, now some agencies are so small that they just don't have the talent that's ready to lead. But if you have an organization where the culture is strong, the culture is positive, and you have a broad enough field of people who have been developed through management leadership training, I think staying inside is the right way to go.
Yeah.
If, however, there's a level of dysfunction, that's when it's often wise to see whether there's candidates from outside who can bring fresh eyes onto the culture and make recommendations as to how they would change it. Often, once we're inside of a culture, we don't always see the problems that exist.
And that's such a great point. I've seen, just for simplicity, I've seen chiefs and executives hire from within, not necessarily being probably the right choice, but they don't want to ruffle any feathers. And then they make bad promotional decisions. And then you got a bigger problem,
right?
You know, that you're dealing with now, because you're promoting somebody that probably shouldn't have got promoted, but you didn't want to piss anybody off. When, like, to your point, I love how you said, you know, if the organization's healthy, and if it is healthy, then stay inside. If it's not, go outside, because, like you said, you could, that person that could be the catalyst for change that comes in.
Right. You know, the President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing that came out probably 5 years ago now, had a great line in it. And that one line was, organizational culture eats policy for lunch. And it's so insightful. It's what it's saying, that your culture is driving the behaviors of the organization, not your rules and regulations. So if you have a healthy culture, people are making good decisions because that's the norm. If you have a dysfunctional culture, then you're going to have all sorts of problems. And those are the things that are often better fixed by somebody from outside of the agency.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you see some of the common mistakes people make as they're trying to go through a promotion? Maybe they're prepping for a promotion. What are some of the common mistakes you're seeing, sir?
The two big ones are, one, that they don't respond at the rank they're testing for. They respond at the rank they're currently at. So to be effective, you have to be putting your mindset into the rank that you're pursuing and answer as though you're in that rank. So for example, where it's really very common is the sergeant candidate that seeking to become a lieutenant. So if you think of the a simple structure of officer, sergeant, lieutenant, the lieutenant candidate, the sergeant testing, will often talk about how he directly communicates with his officers. So you give him a challenge, well, I had to have my officers do this, my officers do this, my officers do this. When what he should be saying is, I'm going to be directing my sergeant to delegate to the officers. Yeah. But they miss it because they're living in it and they realize that that's the way they communicate now. So that's the one big one. The second big one, and this is really big, is that too often they answer their questions the way their organization is and not the way their organization is supposed to be. What I talk about is the concept of Utopia PD. And Utopia PD is that perfect world agency. See, most tests are built around what should you be doing and what should the healthy environment be, not what happens currently. And even in good agencies, you know, resources are stretched thin. Good supervisors realize that sometimes they have to take shortcuts to get the mission accomplished. And that over time becomes the norm of the behavior. Well, if you answer a response based on the shortcuts, you're not going to get the points you're supposed to get for the answer. You have to answer textbook or what the policy says. So it's that mindset of, it's not the way we are, it's the way we're supposed to be, is how I should be answering questions.
Yeah. And how should people, I know this might be a simple question, but I ask it anyway. How should people dress when it comes to promotional processes? I mean, suit, tie, what?
I love it because it's so commonly asked. And it's not as simple as we might think. What I tell people to do is to remember what the whole process is about. Mm-hmm. And because they're being evaluated by people who are looking at them, those people, even if they're told that they shouldn't be thinking about how the person looks, nobody can shut that out. We always will process that. And that's going to have a bearing on how people perceive you. How people perceive you affects what they expect from you. So if they perceive you as a wow when they first see you, they're going to expect that you're going to do well, and they're going to look to support that in their answers. Because if they believe you're going to do well or expect you to do well, and you don't do as well as you should have, then they become wrong. And none of us likes to be wrong. So we tend to compensate for that. So they're more likely to say, I know what he meant to say was, and give you credit that you're not due. So you want to make sure that you're activating that halo effect for the people that are evaluating you. So what I suggest that people do in trying to answer your question is what do the rules say? You know, if the rules are clear on what you should wear, make sure you wear that and make sure that it's perfect. If the rules don't say what you should wear, then question B is, what's the norm in your agency? You know, you can wear anything you want, but everybody wears their Class A uniform. That's just what we do. Well, that gives you some guidance, because now you can go against that because it's not part of the rules, but realize that you're going to stand out if you go against it. It may be positive, but it may not be positive, and you don't know because it's going to be based on how you're perceived. So the safe bet is always to go with what other people are doing.
Yeah.
And then the third piece of this is, let's say that you're not told what to wear. Half people wear suits, half people wear their uniforms. Then what I recommend you do is that you go to somebody that you trust, not somebody you're competing against, but somebody you trust, and get their input on what makes you look more authoritative, look more like that rank that you are pursuing. Some people look better in a suit than they do in their uniform. Some people look better in a uniform than they do in a suit. You have to remember it's about activating that concept or that perception of being an effective leader in the mind of the person that's evaluating you. So don't leave that to chance. Make sure that you pay strong attention to what that your appearance is and what you're wearing.
I love it. Such great advice. I mean, I know in my organization, Bill, they would say professional attire. Okay, what does that mean? Because it means different things to different people. I mean, I take it as suit and tie, and I always, in all my promotions, I always wore a suit and tie. And I love what you said about creating that halo effect. Even if I might have flubbed on an answer, well, you know, he looked good.
Right. We know the halo effect is so influential because if you're in a process where the raters are trained on how to be consistent in their rating, almost always part of that training is to make them aware of the halo effect so they do not let it affect the way that they score somebody. Well, they're being told that because they realize that's a powerful force in how we how we assign a value to somebody, and it could distort from us purely evaluating answers and have us evaluating something that we're not supposed to be evaluating. But what I tell candidates is that halo effect obligation is on the assessor. Mm-hmm. Your obligation is to make that really hard for them to separate that by making sure that you go in there looking like the ideal candidate.
Yeah, such great advice. I know we talked about senior executives, but you help just people prepping to get into law enforcement too, correct?
I do, yes. Although there's not a lot of that lately. You know, that's a very, very small part of my business. Most of it are the people who are seeking to rise in the ranks in the organization.
Well, hopefully, like we were talking about, hopefully we do see those people come back. And what advice, really quick, Chief, what advice would you give for senior executives in law enforcement right now in these difficult times? The people that are already there, not people that are going through there, because you gave great advice, people that are already in those positions.
Understand that the culture is driving the behavior in your organization. And understand, as a leader, you have an important role in directing that culture. And the three things that are advocated as most effective in directing the culture are having a clear vision and making sure that that is known. Now, almost every leader has a vision. In other words, that place they're looking to take the agency. But oftentimes, they don't commit it to writing or share it with a team or make it part of ongoing communication. People want to know where we're heading, especially in challenging times. So that's one thing to make sure that is advocated and put forward so everybody is aware of the direction for the agency. The other is two other things. Get rid of the mixed messages in the organization.
Oh, yeah.
And what are we patting our officers on the back for? You know, if we're telling them to be community related, to try to prevent crimes and to try to, you know, make relationships stronger in the community. What are you doing to reward the officers that actually do that? And we know it's very difficult to measure crimes that are prevented because we don't truly know when we've prevented a crime. But if we're not rewarding and giving some sort of affirmation for that, and if we are continuing to give affirmations for arrests, you know what you're going to see? You're going to see more arrests. Mm-hmm. Because we gravitate to those things that get rewarded for us. So be clear on what the message is, what you're looking for people to do, and make sure that you're rewarding that. And then the third piece is there needs to be a strong perception of accountability in the organization. If you're going to be an executive and you're going to have rules in your organization, you have to make sure that everyone understands that those rules matter and that to not abide by those rules comes with a negative consequence. And they can expect with a level of certainty that there will be that negative consequence. But by putting those three things together, you have a dramatic impact on over time. Now, culture is a hard change, but over time, you start cementing the norms in the organization in a healthy way and in a way where you as the leader can stand up and say that, you know, I own this. I did this. And chips fall where they may. If you don't like it, politicians don't like it, well, then remove me. Because I signed up to do that piece of that. But at the same time, if this is meeting the needs of the community, support me. Because if you don't support me, I'm going to have a hard time supporting the officers and doing what they're supposed to do.
Such great advice, sir, especially in these challenging times. Bill Riley, if people want to reach out to you, sir, employ your services, just talk to you, get advice from you, where can they reach you?
Finest.com. My website is the easiest way to get to me. That's FINEST.com. And all my contact information is on there. My email address is on there, my phone number, even my fax number. I'm sure nobody wants to send me a fax, but you could if you wanted to. But those are the best ways to get more information about what I do and certainly to reach out. I love having conversations regarding these topics. So certainly.
Bill Ryan, reach out. Thank you so much, sir, for coming on the show. Thank you for your dedicated service to the Hartford Police Department. And thank you for continuing to prepare our young men and women as they progress to the law enforcement ranks. Sir, I'd love to have you back on the show. And please take care.
Thank you so much, Patrick. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.